Welcome to Choate's Intellectual Property Insights podcast series, hosted by intellectual property, litigation, and corporate attorneys, covering trending topics at the intersection of science, technology, and law.
Thanks very much to our listeners for joining us today. My name is Brianna McGillicuddy, and I'm a principal at Choate with a focus on intellectual property litigation, both in federal court and before the Patent Trial and Appeal Board, or PTAB. I am joined today by my colleague, Dr. Mandeep Kaur, who's an associate in Choate's patent group, and our wonderful guest speaker, Drew Winship, who is the CEO and co-founder of Juristat, a patent analytics and workflow automation provider. Juristat helps clients such as many large law firms improve patent prosecution outcomes. So thanks to you both for being here today.
Thanks. Happy to be here, Brianna.
Yeah, happy to be here too. Thanks.
So I mentioned that we're going to focus our discussion on identifying experts for use in proceedings before the PTAB as opposed to federal court litigation. Mandeep, can you explain for us what a PTAB proceeding is and how it differs from federal court litigation?
Yes, I'll be happy to. Proceedings before the PTAB offer an alternative mechanism to challenge the validity of patents that are issued from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Inter partes reviews, which are also called IPRs, and post-grant reviews, also referred to as PGRs, any party other than a patent owner can file a petition for PTAB review with certain time limits. These proceedings are conducted by administrative patent judges who will consider both written and oral submissions along with any supporting evidence and render a decision. So essentially, the PTAB proceedings are a shortened or more condensed form of patent litigation, but the focus is only on the validity of the patent at issue.
Now, you mentioned evidence, and I think it's important to note that many of these petitions are supported by evidence from an expert witness. In fact, experts can be a critical part of a post-grant proceeding, both on the side of the petitioner who's trying to show unpatentability, as well as the patent owner who's defending the patent. Now, parties can rely on experts at the initial petition stage, during post-institution filings and depositions, and at the trial itself. As a result, we found it's really important to secure top-notch experts at the outset of an IPR or PGR, just as it is in federal litigation. Drew, in your experience, how is retaining an expert in a PTAB proceeding different than doing so for federal court?
Yeah, so first, let's focus on the fact that a lot of people use the same expert for both cases, the federal district court litigation and the PTAB, but they're going to be looking at different things. First, and maybe most importantly, at the PTAB, you don't have a jury. So you can find an expert who gives a great deposition, has phenomenal analysis at the declaration level, has a great CV, but maybe they don't have a ton of charisma. They aren't going to perform well in front of a jury. And so you can still use them at the PTAB. And that's the first big difference. The second is the PTAB court is going to give way more deference to the expert. You have Daubert motions at the federal district court level. You have, you know, the court actually saying, like, you know, we don't trust this expert. We don't really believe this expert. That doesn't really happen at the PTAB. There are avenues to pursue. You can file a motion to exclude an expert's testimony and deposition at the PTAB. But Juristat's done an analysis, hand analysis, AI analysis of 8,000 such motions. We've never found a single one that's been granted. Not one. So that's the big takeaway. Keep filing your motions to exclude. You should do that to preserve the issue. But essentially, you have a 0% chance of it being granted.
So at the end of the day, expert testimony is important, whether you're in federal court or at the PTAB. But based on Juristat's research, the PTAB might exhibit a bit more deference to experts.
That's correct, at least based on our analysis so far. I mean, there might be a change in the future, but as far as we've seen it, no chance. Brianna, what I'm interested in is what do you look for as a litigator when you start the process of retaining an expert for an IPR or PGR?
You know, Drew, the process is not too dissimilar between PTAB proceedings and federal court litigation when it comes to looking for an expert. But as you mentioned, the audience is different at the PTAB than in federal court. For starters, PTAB judges have, all of them have some technical background, even if it's not in the same field as the patent being challenged. So they're going to be more discerning than a jury, or in the case of a bench trial, a judge in federal court, who likely don't have any technical degree. That said, we're always looking for an expert who has the appropriate subject matter expertise and who will present well, meaning he or she will come across as genuine and honest, as opposed to evasive or a hired gun. We also want to make sure to retain someone who's not going to fold under the pressure of intense deposition questioning or cross-examination, someone who's going to stay true to the testimony that they submitted in their expert report and that's supportive of our case.
So that's really interesting. A lot of times we think about you want someone with the most experience. Is there ever an instance where you might want to use an expert who's literally never testified before the PTAB?
It's definitely not a prerequisite that someone has served as an expert witness before. There's, in fact, many instances when we have used new expert witnesses, and that can certainly have its own advantages. You know, if someone hasn't served as an expert before in the litigation, they may come across as more genuine on the stand and less as someone who's made a career out of providing this type of testimony. Also, sometimes the technical issues are so nuanced or fall within a subspecialty of another specialty that there aren't that many people out there who have done it before. So finding those experts can sometimes prove to be a bit more difficult, and you do wind up with someone who hasn't done it before. Mandeep, can you share a bit about the process that you follow when looking to retain an expert witness?
Yes, of course. So initially, we need to define very specifically the type of expert witness we're looking for to make sure that the search parameters are such that we will actually identify individuals who qualify as an expert witness, meaning that the individual has the right experience and also education to opine on the issues at hand. In many instances, we or someone else at the firm or the client would have used someone in the past for another case that we've liked. So we will first go through our internal contact list or Rolodex and see if anyone fits the bill. If not, then we may ask whether anyone at the client has recommendations or preferences. Sometimes, if we know of key scientific publications or players in the field who are particularly relevant to the issues at hand, then we perform searches to identify potentially relevant experts using publication databases or even basic web searches. So these are the most cost-efficient ways. And after that, we may retain an expert firm who can help us with the task.
Can you explain the role of an expert search firm for our audience?
Yeah, so an expert search firm is a group that has relationships with a wide range of potential experts, and they serve as a connector, essentially, between the attorneys and the experts. They will interview the attorneys to learn about the expert needs, and then they present possible candidates. The attorneys can also interview the expert, and this is usually done in the presence of a representative from the search firm, and this is to evaluate whether the expert has the required qualifications. Based on this, the attorneys can then decide to retain the expert, which then with the search firm will take a portion of any fees or to move on.
So in trying to identify an expert, we have, you know, prior experience, the experts we've used before, client connections, folks who the client may know, doing our own independent research, and then connecting with expert search firms. Drew, can you share for us how you're using analytics to search for experts?
Yeah, sure. We start with three different data points. So name search, keyword search, patent number search. And then let's unpack all three of those. The first one, name search, sounds exactly like it sounds. You type in the name of an expert, and we'll give you a list of every case they've ever opined in, every declaration they've ever filed, their CVs, the depositions, you name it. And I will say this is the lion's share of use of folks on our app using this tool. It's for opposition research, right? They have the name of what the other side's using, and they look that individual up to find inconsistencies in their testimony, to know who they've worked for before, just get the lay of the land of this expert. Do they keep getting rehired by the same firms and the same assignees over and over? That's probably a pretty good expert that that client is happy with. The next is text search. And again, this same Boolean text search you've ever done on Westlaw or Lexis or any tool out there, right? You type in biologic, or you type in, you know, within quotes, food processor, machine learning, whatever your term is. And we'll go search through every declaration, every CV to find individuals who have those search terms appear, right? Those are pretty straightforward. The maybe most unique thing we have is a patent number search, where you can just type in a patent number that involved in your underlying case, and we will spit out, here's the list of the best experts for you based on a number of variables, including kind of those, hey, are the keywords from your underlying patent that we see in the claims and the spec and the abstract appear in the CVs and the declarations of these experts? How much experience do they have? We're going to reveal costs to you. And all of those factors play into propagating a list of potential experts. And that's really where folks who don't know where to start. Just what patent number is at issue? Let's go find a list of experts and start researching from there. Brianna, once you are presented with a potential expert, you know, whether it be from a search firm, from Juristat, from wherever, and decided the resume looks good, the CV looks good, how do you go about vetting those people?
Great question, Drew. We all know someone who looks good on paper may not be the actual best person for us. So first, we set up an initial interview to meet with the proposed expert, either in person or via a video chat, so we can actually see the person's mannerisms in responding to our questions, because that's really important. We'll also ask the substantive questions to make sure the person has the right technical chops, but all the while we'll be evaluating the expert's behavior. How receptive is he or she to the questions? How thoughtful is he or she? Do they come across as genuine and professional, or like they're trying to give us the answer we want to hear? And we look at this because we're evaluating the proposed expert the same way, you know, a PTAP judge or someone, you know, in the audience for our actual case is going to be considering this individual. And we really want to make sure they have the substantive expertise and they have the right ability to testify and come across as genuine. We'll also do our research in the background. We'll check to see if the expert has ever been excluded by a court before, because that's really important. We also want to search the dockets to see if there are deposition or trial transcripts that we can review. We can look up any prior expert reports or other publications to see if there's anything out there that would be inconsistent with what the case we're trying to present. Essentially, we put on the hat of opposing counsel and try to dig up anything the other side would try to use to see whether there's anything that make us shy away from retaining that person. Mandeep, anything I'm missing here?
I would just add that, you know, in certain situations, we can also retain multiple experts depending on the client's budget, and not all of these would be testifying experts, and we can then consult with each of the experts as the case progresses. In the end, we'll have the opportunity to work with a number of really smart people, and then we can decide through that work who the best testifying expert may be. In some instances, a non-testifying expert can also contribute significantly by giving input on scientific questions that are an issue in the case.
Excellent point. Well, that about wraps up our discussion today. Drew, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to hear your perspective when it comes to finding an expert witness.
Thanks for having me.
And to the audience, thanks for listening. And please stay tuned for the next episode in our series on utilizing expert witnesses at the PTAP.
For more information, please visit www.choate.com. You can also listen to additional podcast episodes in the newsroom of our website and subscribe to them wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. The information presented in this recording is for educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice for a specific situation. If you wish to obtain legal advice, you should retain an attorney and explain the facts of your particular situation.